This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite is sponsored by Finisar, supplier of active optical cables for high-performance connectivity.
This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry, with Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Hello, everyone, and good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for September 11th, 2009, available every Friday on iTunes. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and we have with us Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360. Good morning, Addison.
Morning, Michael.
So this week on the program, we're going to talk about some of the NSF funding for a new supercomputing network project. But first, we have the opportunity to speak with Michael Wolff, a compiler engineer at the Portland Group, who wrote a very interesting article this week for us at HPC Wire on OpenCL, the new programming, parallel programming language for GPUs and CPUs. Welcome to the program, Michael.
Good morning, Michael. Good morning, Addison.
Morning, Michael.
So OpenCL, we've given a lot of coverage to this over the past 6 months. It's come on strong. There's a lot of interest in the community about OpenCL since it sort of looks like this very interesting parallel programming model that addresses GPUs and CPUs and might act as sort of a unifying software layer for the microprocessors that are now very popular in HPC. OpenCL is supposed to be the generalized parallel language for a variety of microprocessors. As you mentioned in your article, Michael, developers already have a lot of parallel programming choices for CPUs. There's OpenMP, there's spreading building blocks, UPC, etc. How do you think this plays out for OpenCL as far as replacing or perhaps underlying these other languages?
That's a fair question. Will OpenCL replace any of the other parallel programming models? And the answer to that, I strongly believe, is no. It has no chance to do so, and I don't think it aims to do so. OpenCL is a very low-level programming language. It's more of a high-level assembly language for parallel programming than it is a high-level parallel programming language. Most attempts to design parallel programming languages are trying to raise the level of the language so to make parallel programming more accessible to real programmers as opposed to the low-level guts and grimy, detailed programmers that try to optimize the key kernel algorithms. OpenCL is more aimed at the latter approach. And so I don't think, in fact, it will replace any other of the other languages. It might augment it in the sense that as being a portable assembly language for parallel programming.
How about as far as underlying these languages? I'm just talking about CPUs here. We'll get to GPUs in a second. Do you think, like you said, it's a lower-level software layer. Do you think OpenCL will be used to underlie any of these current parallel programming languages that you see out there?
And that's another interesting question. And I think if the target is just CPUs, I don't think we need an OpenCL. We have underlying mechanisms like POSIX thread.
Mm-hmm.
It's only portability across different architectural schemas like GPUs, like other accelerators, that make OpenCL a much more interesting model.
So putting aside high-performance computing for the moment, do you think OpenCL stands more of a chance in client-side computing? Apple, of course, is one of the big pushers behind OpenCL. So they're looking at it from the point of view of PCs and handheld devices and accelerating applications on the client side. And if OpenCL does become successful there, do you think it would stand a better chance of migrating into HPC because of the commercial success on the client side?
And you're a little out of my area of expertise here. My understanding for client-side computing, most of the heavy-duty compute is done on the server. On the client, it's mostly doing lightweight compute and display, in the sense that programmers want to optimize the display using OpenGL or whatever sort of graphics primitives they have. They might want to optimize some of the local compute using something like an OpenCL. So there's a possibility, I suppose, for some success and adoption in that arena. And then would that migrate into HPC? Well, if there is supply of a lot of implementations of OpenCL, then the supply might drive adoption into HPC, but otherwise I don't think it's going to have much of an effect.
Michael, one of the things people look at with GPU development, of course, is the development effort that has to go into applications. And a big part of NVIDIA's success has been CUDA. Now, when you look at OpenCL, one of the big benefits it potentially brings to the game is portability. Whereas CUDA is NVIDIA-specific, OpenCL is potentially portable to other GPU platforms. What do you think that means for the future role of OpenCL versus CUDA? Is OpenCL a potential CUDA killer in the long run?
That's a very interesting question. And let me break it into two questions, and in particular let me focus on the portability aspects. So OpenCL is portable in the sense that the language is portable, and I tried to bring this out in the column that appeared in HPC Wire this week. The language is portable, and that's a very important aspect, but the programs are not necessarily so portable. I mean, yeah, it's portable, they'll run, but if you're going to make the effort to port your program into OpenCL, you're doing this because you really want the performance, and you're really going to optimize that program as highly as you can to get the performance that you want out of that machine. My experience for programming for the NVIDIA, for instance, there's a lot of detailed aspects of the target architecture that filter into the program. And NVIDIA makes no bones about this. They expose this, and they tell you this is the amount of level of detail you need to get into to really get really high performance on these machines with your program. So if you're going to take that program and run it on a different GPU or some different accelerator entirely, that program is optimized for this architecture. To move the program to a different architecture, you need to re-optimize it. So having OpenCL as a portable language will make that simpler in the sense that you're still dealing with the same language, you only had to learn one language. But the programs are not portable, and are not performance portable, and I think that should not be understated.
So what about the second part of the question, the CUDA killer aspect?
Well, CUDA, in fact, is a slightly higher level language than OpenCL. CUDA adds some syntax to the language, which OpenCL does not. So it's easier to write a program in CUDA than it is inside OpenCL. And NVIDIA is highly committed to CUDA, and yes, they're going to supply OpenCL as well, because they need to. Now, the question will be whether the adoption rate for OpenCL will drive people away from using NVIDIA-specific CUDA, and we'll have to wait to see how that plays out. I think CUDA has some interesting and some important strengths that should not be minimized.
As you look into your crystal ball and the role of OpenCL, how does that influence PGI's development decisions with regards to its own compilers?
We have made no announcements about our plans for OpenCL, in particular for implementing OpenCL. We've been following this development very closely.
You don't care to make an announcement here on the podcast?
I do not. We think it could be a very interesting target as more or less, as I said, a portable assembly language in the sense that many academic compilers use the C language as a portable assembly language.
All right, I'll wrap up then by asking you a different forward-looking question. We've got Larrabee out on the horizon. How do you, just at a high level, how do you see Larrabee influencing this space?
Well, nobody makes money betting against Intel. Larrabee has some interesting architectural features, and it has, of course, has Intel behind it. Intel makes a big deal about how Larrabee will be easy to program because it's just an x86. Well, programming a parallel computer like a Larrabee may or may not be easy. The fact that it is or is not an x86 has absolutely nothing to do with that. The other architectural aspects of it will make it easy or hard. And I think the Larrabee has, well, let me write another column about the whole Larrabee issue there. So I think in graphics, well, I don't know what to say about that.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Michael.
Michael, thanks very much for that perspective on this topic and coming on the show to share your thoughts. And we'll be looking forward to your next column, maybe on Larrabee.
Okay. Thanks much.
So we're going to take a short 30-second break, and when we come back, we'll talk about a new supercomputing network project being funded out of the NSF.
You're listening to HPC Wire Soundbite.
Finisar's high-performance active optical cables accelerate data connectivity for storage, networking, and HPC applications. Finisar's cable family includes laser wire for 10 gigabit Ethernet, QuadWire for 40 gigabit InfiniBand QDR, and C-Wire for 120 gigabit InfiniBand QDR. Finisar is the world's largest supplier and trusted leader in optical communications. Visit www.finisar.com to download your cable family brochure.
And now, back to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
So late this week, we saw some news about Indiana University. The university has been chosen by the NSF to lead a four-year, $15 million project to develop new software to hook together supercomputers and enable new ways to do distributed scientific research. The NSF is amping up about $10 million with project partners at other centers providing the balance. So here we have yet another NSF project to enhance our supercomputer network capabilities. Addison, you read a little bit about this. What do you make of it?
Well, you're right. I've read a little bit about it. I'd like to get briefed on it further because there's a lot of it that I'd like to understand more. Let me start from the standpoint that I think the investment in networking is absolutely an area that we need to invest in. Communication speed becomes more important than ever as networks try to keep up with computational needs, providing access to supercomputing resources. We've got cloud computing out there now. There are all kinds of reasons why we need investment in faster networks to go along with our faster supercomputers. There are a number of questions that I have, and you know, I haven't spoken with anyone at NSF about it, nor at Indiana University. I have read the news story and the press release. I'd like to get an understanding of how this fits in with other current grid projects. First of all, I understand they're going to be using Internet 2 and National Lambda Rail as well as other high-speed networks. But I'd like to get a sense of where this fits in, for example, together with TerraGrid. And I just don't have a sense of what's an independent development effort here versus extending efforts that NSF and other academic and supercomputing research partners have already put forth. Do you have any thoughts on that, Michael?
I wondered the same thing when I read the press release. I mean, the news came kind of late in the week, so I didn't get a chance to follow up on it with anybody. So I'm wondering the exact same things you are, and wondering, you know, what is the nature of this networking project, how it differs or relates to TerraGrid, how it hooks up to other regional supercomputing networks that people are coming up with. But I mean, it's not surprising. The NSF does things like this. It puts down a lot of $2 bets on different projects and tries to see different approaches to different things. So I think this can be under that category. Now, this is quite a $2 bet. It's $10 million they're putting up, so I'm assuming they're expecting something to come out of this. But I'm just sort of wondering how it relates to any larger strategy the NSF has for hooking together supercomputing capability in the U.S.
Yeah, you mentioned a good point with it being $10 million. And, you know, this is an area where we've been expecting a large grant-based business to be the bright spot among the academic sector, especially as they're suffering from endowments. So here is an example of government grants that are still coming through for these types of national infrastructure projects, and that's good news. The other half of the concern I have is I worry anytime I see a large government grant in the academic space that goes to the development of a technology that might be developed in the competitive sector, in the free market. And as I look at this, I wonder, you know, if I were Platform Computing or Univa UD or somebody like that, you know, do I have a problem with a government grant going to a university to develop this kind of capability, grid-like capability for connecting multiple supercomputing centers? Is that going to conflict with products that I intend to sell and that I'm putting my own development money into over the next couple of years? Now, I don't know any of the details of this. It could be that some of the partner money is going to those companies in the industrial sector that'll help fuel the development. But I am curious about that relationship as well.
Well, I guess we'll just have to follow it and see what happens to the project and see who are the vendors in the commercial world that do get signed on to this, or if it's just pure research, and we'll see what to make of it, maybe see what the TerraGrid people think. But we'll be following the story, and maybe we can report on it in a subsequent program. But I think for this week, that should just about do it. Addison, thanks a bunch, and talk to you again next week.
Great. Thanks, Michael. Looking forward to it.
This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite has been sponsored by Finisar, supplier of active optical cables for high-performance connectivity. For more information on Finisar's active optical cables, visit our website at www.finisar.com.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Download this podcast every Friday afternoon at www.hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.